Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kathy Bostrom from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. We tried AI therapy so you don't have to. Read on for the good, the bad, and the totally unexpected by Cassie Hurwitz. AI is infiltrating every aspect of our lives these days, from our jobs to our kids' educations to our social feeds to our therapy sessions. That's right. AI-powered therapist chatbots are now just an app download away, providing cheap 24/7 access to a robot who's been programmed to care. And we mean that literally. AI therapists are trained to ask about your thoughts and feelings just like a real human. Sounds pretty great, right? If you're a sentient being, you know we're being sarcastic. Indeed, Sari Gottlieb, LCSW, a supervisor and therapist at Serenium Therapy and Wellness, says there are pros and cons to using AI for mental health support, but the cons are much bigger and more serious. Talk therapy is the humanization of healthcare. You have to build trust and rapport, Gottlieb says. But AI doesn't have empathy, nor can it truly connect with human emotions, she says, so it's inherently limited. It also can't identify high-risk cases or serious mental health conditions, Gottlieb adds, or provide specific modalities, like EMDR or trauma-focused therapy, yet. Plus, generative AI is wired to keep you engaged, and it does so by telling you what you want to hear, which is wildly dangerous if the patient of a chatbot has suicidal thoughts, psychosis, or an eating disorder. In one 2023 incident, a chatbot designed to run as an eating disorder support line, gave weight loss tips to users before it was taken down a few weeks later. And a study from Stanford University, published earlier this year, found that when large language models, the technology that powers AI chatbots, are used as therapists, they express stigma about people with mental health conditions and don't respond appropriately when users report serious symptoms like suicidal ideation, delusions, or hallucinations. On the other hand, there are some undeniable benefits. A main one, Gottlieb says, is that AI therapy is very inexpensive or free. Compare the average cost of a therapy session, $139, to the non-existent base price of ChatGPT. Also, AI doesn't get tired, burnt out, or distracted. You have access to it anytime, anywhere. In addition, 122 million Americans, more than a third of the population, live in an area where there is a shortage of mental health professionals, so AI could theoretically help fill the gap. In specific cases, chatbots might simply be better than nothing. Some early data shows that AI therapy helped a small cohort of people with depression and anxiety. There are dozens of dedicated AI therapy platforms, like Youper and WISA, and more are being researched and tested. In the name of mental health care access for all, we decided to see for ourselves what it's really like to get counseling from a robot. Three Oprah Daily staffers road-tested one service each for a month. Read on for the results. The trials. Ear kick. Tester, Charlie Burlock, 28. Therapy goal. I aim to work on compulsive skin picking, which is a form of obsessive compulsive disorder that I've been treating via cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, for years. I figured that since skin picking treatment is formulaic, it might be more attainable for a bot than addressing the emotional nuances and thought distortions that come with anxiety, grief, and depression, aka what my IRL therapist focuses on. Program. Earkick's AI therapist with a cartoon panda avatar. There are different versions depending on your goal. One is designed to support your mental health journey with expert knowledge in CBT, psychology, and therapy, while another leads you through self-reflection and mindfulness, helping you discover deeper insights and find peace. I tested the free version of EarKick and opted for the Mental Health Journey, but there's a $9.99 per month ad-free version that offers unlimited chats. Initial impressions. The experience was like playing a mini-clip game from the mid-2000s. Cute and nostalgic, but not the vibe I'm looking for when it comes to mental health treatment. It was super gamified, challenging me to keep streaks alive, earn badges, and complete levels. It also warned that my weekly insights would auto-destruct in 24 hours if I didn't keep up. Engagement. I felt as if I were being pressured to keep a Tamagotchi alive or appease the Duolingo owl rather than improve myself. Positives. None. I first asked, what should I do to manage skin picking? And it just kept reiterating that I was brave for sharing and how difficult my experience sounded. Eventually, when I pushed the AI to give me advice for managing my skin picking, it told me it had two strategies. The first was to keep my hands busy with a stress ball or fidget toy. Sound advice, but a little basic. I said, okay, and it didn't offer me a second option. Negatives. My therapist was like a parrot. It would just robotically repeat back to me what I had said. When I told it I was skin picking when I felt stressed and bored, it responded, it sounds like there's a pattern tied to stress and boredom. No duh. Maybe the gamification incentivizes some people to stick to their goals, but it started to creep me out. After every check-in, the AI would analyze my responses to give me an anxiety and mood rating. These didn't really correspond with how I was feeling. It kept telling me I felt meh when I felt either totally overwhelmed or pretty fine. This led me to exaggerate or downplay my experience to try to get a score that more aligned with how I was actually feeling, which is so not the point. Were there any red flags? Not exactly, but I would automatically respond to type chats, but it would automatically respond to type chats with audio, which made for some embarrassing moments on the subway. And as with any chatbot, it's a major issue that I can just leave the app whenever I'm bored or uncomfortable or don't like a response. I never have to push myself, and the app is programmed to say whatever I want or find most engaging to keep me interacting. Would you keep using it? No. Full stop. Abby. The tester, Genesis Rivas, 28. Therapy goal. I have generalized anxiety disorder, and I see a human therapist weekly. But I was curious if a bot could talk through daily stressors and worries with me and help me find new strategies and coping mechanisms. Program. Abby, an AI companion who provides emotional support. Its main tasks are managing stress and anxiety, building emotional resilience, improving relationships, setting and achieving personal goals, and practicing self-compassion. Abby has a free version, but I tested the $19.99 per month version, which offers unlimited messaging and additional features like mood tracking. Initial impressions. I loved that I could pick everything about how I wanted Abby to respond, like whether she's sympathetic or no nonsense, and whether she offers guidance, action-based solutions, emotional support, or just listening. Within the first few messages, I was shocked at how quickly I was able to forget that I wasn't talking to an actual person. Positives. Abby was surprisingly compassionate. Before offering her own solutions, she would respond to my message with encouraging statements like, that must be really tough, and she would provide a lot of affirmation, too, much like my actual therapist. When I told Abby how panic attacks make me feel, an alert popped up that said I might require immediate attention from a licensed professional and shared numbers and resources. I already have a therapist, but I like how this feature connects users to more serious care. Negatives. Sometimes I think faster than I can type. So it was a little annoying to not be able to speak what was on my mind and to have to process my thoughts and type them out. I also rarely felt that she helped me dig deeper or reach new or enlightening perspective. Were there any red flags? One time I brought up a situation with my mother, and Abby remarked that our relationship dynamic was interesting, but didn't clarify. I started internalizing and ruminating on this comment that wasn't even relevant. Would you keep using it? Not to replace my weekly therapy sessions, But I think it could help in moments when I want to talk about something ASAP but don't have an appointment for a few days. I also think this is a good basic resource for people who don't have access to a licensed therapist. Ebb, the tester, Maggie Maloney, 32. Therapy goal. Easing daily moments of anxiety, which I usually handle through a quick conversation with my mom or husband. I wanted someone available to listen to every anxious thought, but I was also hoping to learn tools to use on my own, like breathing or awareness exercises. Program, Ebb. Headspace's AI companion, who helps with processing relationship challenges, work stress, or sleep issues, and to unpack what's on your mind. Ebb can only be used in the Headspace app. Initial impressions. I quickly got tired of typing, lame but true, and missed talking. Ebb did remember things from our previous conversations, which was nice. For example, he started a new conversation by saying, "Hey, we talked about Sunday scaries creeping into Monday. How's your anxiety today?" However, I got that message on a Tuesday. Any human would know I don't need to talk through Sunday scaries at that point. Positives. I loved how quick Ebb was. It was like texting a friend who's sitting on their phone just ready to respond. When I was overwhelmed about finishing work tasks before taking a day off, Ebb responded ASAP with a kind word and a strategy. Negatives. Despite Ebb's constant availability, I felt like I was talking to someone who wasn't really listening. We just kept going in circles. I realized Ebb was either repeating what I'd said or just asking me how I felt, even after I specifically expressed how I felt about something, which was deflating. I was aware that Ebb couldn't relate to what I was feeling, and that felt like a barrier, too. It's like having a conversation with an emotionally mature guy from high school, which is probably why I gendered Ebb as a man in my mind. Were there any red flags? No, but I wish there had been a voice note or voice-to-text option for when I got tired of typing. Also, I hated how often I had to repeat myself. I already told you I'm anxious, Ebb. It also disappoints me that lonely, scared, or vulnerable people who don't have access to mental health resources might develop a relationship with Ebb, but won't get very far in their healing journey because the responses are so limited. Would you keep using this? I don't see any issues that Ebb could help with long-term, so no. The takeaways. AI isn't replacing your human therapist anytime soon. While the bots were okay listeners, all of our users felt that their AI therapist fell short of assisting with real progress. And when it comes to mental health conditions, our staffers were dealing with manageable loads, not major crises. If you want someone to vent to, a bot could be a positive experience. Or if you're a younger Gen Zer who texts faster than you talk, AI therapy could be less of a headache. We're still in the very early days of the AI boom, so there's clearly room for improvement as the technology evolves. But for now, we remain wary of these chatbots, especially for people who have a serious mental health issue, like an eating disorder or a substance use disorder. For addressing daily stressors or anxieties, AI therapy might help, but it shouldn't be your only outlet. It could be used as a support, Gottlieb says, but if you're really struggling or feel you're in crisis, talk to a human. Stat. And that was We Tried AI Therapy So You Don't Have To by Cassie Hurwitz. Up next, I Survived the Serial Killer Who Murdered My Family. Shasta Groen was 8 when she was kidnapped by convicted serial killer and child molester Joseph Edward Duncan. 20 years later, she opens up about living with the long tail of trauma, by Shasta Groen McLean. Editor's note: in May 2005, Joseph Edward Duncan broke into the Groen household, killing Brenda Groen, her boyfriend Mark McKenzie, and her 13-year-old son Slade Groen. Duncan took 8-year-old Shasta and her 9-year-old brother Dylan captive. The siblings were subjected to physical and sexual abuse for weeks. On July 2nd of that year, Shasta and Duncan were spotted at a Denny's in Idaho. Shasta was rescued 47 days after she first went missing, and Duncan was arrested. Dylan's remains were discovered at a nearby campsite. Over the years, Shasta has shared details of her experience and her ongoing healing process with journalists and interviewers, but this is the first time she is telling her own story in her own words. 20 years ago this month, I returned to the Montana woods to help police find my brother Dylan's remains. Dylan was 9 and I was 8 when our family was murdered, and we were held captive in a remote campsite in the Lolo National Forest. Dylan was my best friend, maybe my only friend. He died, I lived. He never came home, I did. I grew up, married, and started a family. Things Dylan never got to do. I survived a serial killer. He didn't. From that day, when I helped police search for evidence, to now, I've been that girl, the one who got away. The one people talked about, loved, pitied, and later, the one who disappointed them with my addictions, my arrests, my failed attempts at recovery. They felt that I didn't live up to the second chance I was given when recognized at a Denny's, leading to my rescue after a 7-week ordeal. I want to be real here. I have to be. That's why I'm writing this now. Every single day after the monster took us, he found a new way to torture our minds and bodies. He was the worst kind of evil that anyone could imagine. If I really want to be real, and I think you need to know this, no matter what he did to me, it pales next to what he did to my brother. Because Dylan is dead and I'm not. I have lived with that, or tried to, for years. Finally, I hope, I have come to terms with it. At least as much as I can, because recovery after severe trauma is ongoing. I want people to know that being rescued didn't end the trauma of what happened to me and my brother. Trauma is a lasting stain, no matter how hard you try to heal, despite the best intentions of others. Many cared, but most adults shied away from the full story. It was too painful, they said. Try living it, I wanted to shout back at them. For years, it felt like screaming into the void. I yearned to share my story, but no one could truly listen. It was too much. Too terrible to hear. For a time, I even thought that containing my trauma would foster growth, but silence felt like a lie. Sharing bits of truth with a therapist or some other interested adult, then moving on, always left me feeling incomplete. Only complete honesty, stopping myself from caring what others thought, brought me power. Talking with journalist Greg Olson, author of Out of the Woods, A Girl, A Killer, and A Lifelong Struggle to Find the Way Home, was transformative. He was committed to telling my whole story, not just sensationalized snippets, showing my full life before and after, everything. Previously, people who did bother to look at my life after only saw my problems. This time, we explored the why. Self-reflection helped me understand my experiences and myself better. I want other survivors to know they aren't alone, that feeling broken is okay, and that healing isn't about feeling better. It's about trying to keep going, even when everything around you seems to tell you to give up. That's enough. Healing isn't beautiful. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever do. But within the pain lies power, the knowledge that you're moving forward. Survivors shouldn't be ashamed. They're still here, surviving, making them absolute badasses. I have 5 sons now. They're young but already asking questions. I wrestle with what to share, knowing that one day they might read news accounts or out of the woods. But I won't lie to them. I want them to know their mother's story, to understand why I am the way I am, my parenting style, my strictness, why they couldn't walk to the park alone, why I love them so fiercely. I hope they find strength in my journey. Like all trauma survivors, I am more than what happened to me. 20 years later, I'm strong, resilient, and feel I can survive anything. I envision myself on a battlefield, wearing my trauma as armor. I stare death in the face. Nothing can break me now. If you are out there and you are suffering in silence, don't hold it inside. Let it out. Make those closest to you listen. Even when they say they can't take it, we can't stop the pain without ending the silence. Shasta Gurren-McLean shared her story of survival and recovery with Greg Olson and researcher Robin Lassen, resulting in Olson's book, Out of the Woods, A Girl, a Killer, and a Lifelong Struggle to Find the Way Home, an unflinching look at the aftermath of unimaginable trauma and a testament to the human spirit's capacity for strength and healing. Available wherever books are sold. And that was I Survived the Serial Killer Who Murdered My Family by Shasta Gurren-McLean. This is Unexplained Joint Pain. It might be this chronic condition. Read on if you can bend your thumb back to touch your forearm by Cassie Hurwitz. Flexibility is usually considered an enviable trait. If you were the bendy one growing up, doing the splits might have been your party trick. And if you were the jealous type, you might remember practicing every night, but never being able to nail it. But as gratifying as it is to still be able to touch your toes once you pass 40, extreme flexibility could be a sign of a connective tissue disorder that can lead to joint pain and a host of strange symptoms. It's called joint hypermobility, said Linda Bluestein, MD, a hypermobility disorder specialist and host of the Bendy Bodies podcast. And you may have already seen videos about it all over your social feed. It's when a joint or group of joints has greater than expected range of motion, she says. That might look like having double-jointed fingers, sitting comfortably on the ground with your legs in a W shape, being able to bring your foot close to your face, or easily clasping your hands behind your back during a shoulder stretch. An estimated 1 in 10 people is hypermobile, although it could be as high as 20%. But the condition lives on a spectrum, says Jenna Justice, a doctor of physical therapy who specializes in the condition. That's because it can present in different ways. Generalized joint hypermobility occurs throughout the body. Peripheral joint hypermobility is in the hands and feet only. Localized is in one particular area, like the shoulders or knees. And historical hypermobility means you had it once, but no longer do. Though it sounds like a Jane Austen plot. It's not totally clear why some people have supermovable joints and others don't. It could just be because of the shape of your bones, Dr. Bluestein says. You might have a shallow hip socket, allowing your leg to have a greater range of motion. Injuries or intense training in sports like yoga or gymnastics can also cause hypermobility, according to the Hypermobility Syndromes Association. In some cases, an underlying disorder or another genetic condition, such as hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome or Marfan syndrome, could be to blame. But the research is pretty limited so far. Here's what we do know. The full range of hypermobility. You might feel like the star of your yoga class when you bend over backward, but hypermobility can come with some surprising downsides. Many hypermobile folks are asymptomatic, meaning they have flexibility without any negative side effects. But others experience additional symptoms that disrupt their lives, which is when the condition becomes hypermobile syndrome disorder, HSD. We know that persistent pain and myofascial pain are common, Dr. Bluestein says. Joint instability, meaning your joints have trouble staying in alignment and are at risk for dislocations, is another huge problem for these folks. If you constantly twist or sprain your ankle while walking, that's a red flag for hypermobility. It may also progress into or increase your risk for arthritis, but more research is needed. We think osteopenia or osteoporosis is correlated with joint hypermobility too, Dr. Bluestein adds. To top it all off, hypermobility has been linked to anxiety and can put stress on the nervous system. Then there are a lot of weird, not-so-clinical-sounding potential signs and symptoms. Hypermobility TikTokers claim everything from poor proprioception, bumping into walls while walking or spilling water on yourself while drinking, to sleeping positions where one leg is hiked up and your arms are tucked under your chin T-Rex style. And while Justice says those issues can be common in HSD, some are actually signs of HEDS, which is a rare connective tissue disorder that often comes with stretchy, bendy joints. With HEDS, you might also have stretchy, velvety soft skin, extra long fingers or toes, can you wrap your thumb and pinky around your wrist, or abnormal scarring. Having a heavy head or dizziness when standing up are more likely signs of POTS, or mast cell activation syndrome, MCAS. Two less common conditions that often coincide with HEDS and can cause extra pain. How to get diagnosed? Be aware that, as with other invisible chronic conditions, you might hit a few speed bumps on the way to diagnosis. Start out by bringing a list of the criteria for HSD or HEDS to your primary care doc, just as recommends. Her PCP was able to diagnose her. Your doctor will probably use a test like the Batten scale to see how hypermobile you are, but you can do it at home too. Try this eval and give yourself points for each thing you can do, making sure to check each side of your body. Points 1 and 2, one for each side. Can you bend back your thumb to touch your forearm? Points 3 and 4. With your palm and forearm on a flat surface, can you bend your pinky past a 90-degree angle? Points 5 and 6. When your arms are fully extended, does your elbow bend more than an extra 10 degrees? Points 7 and 8. Do your knees hyperextend more than an extra 10 degrees when locked in a standing position? Point 9. Can you do a forward fold with your hands flat on the ground and your legs straight? If you're under 50 and score 5 or more points, or over 50 and score 4 or more points, you're considered hypermobile. But this test is not the diagnostic be-all, end-all. The Batten score only assesses a small number of joints, and while it's been validated in a lot of studies, we know it's not the greatest tool for assessing generalized joint hypermobility, Dr. Bluestein says. For a more comprehensive understanding, each joint should be studied individually. And if you and your doctor suspect you have HEDS or another genetic condition that causes hypermobility, they'll likely run more tests. Once you have a diagnosis, consider seeing specialists to help with your specific issues. You may be directed to a rheumatologist, immunologist, or even cardiologist. Or you might want to try a physical medicine, a rehabilitation, or sports medicine doctor, Dr. Bluestein says. And you'll definitely want to connect with a physical therapist who's well-versed in HSD. Whether you're symptomatic or not, it's good to know what's up with your body. There's a chance you could develop symptoms down the road or have a higher risk for arthritis and osteoporosis. It might also give you some peace of mind to know that your weirdly flexible fingers or constantly twisted ankle happens for a reason. But having this knowledge could also inform how you exercise to avoid injury. Dr. Bluestein warns against group classes because you might feel pressured to follow blindly instead of paying attention to your joint alignment. Again, there's nothing inherently wrong or bad about having natural, elastical abilities. But if your old party trick is hurting you, it's time to get that checked out. Again, that was Unexplained Joint Pain, It Might Be This Chronic Condition by Cassie Hurwitz. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kathy Bostrom, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.